Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the 84th episode of the Calcioland podcast. And boy, do we have a special show planned for you tonight. The second part of the show, we'll be joined by our great friend Matteo Bonetti for a superb chat on Serie A as well as video games. I think you'll really enjoy that. We have our game predictions from a thousand names who's scorching hot right now, and we have some fantastic Twitter questions from you guys, which we always appreciate so much. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, great producer, outstanding co-host, Alex Goldberg. People want to hear more and more from you, Alex. We get tweets. People want you to do more of your own shows. So tonight I wanted to talk to you about a player that's been a lot in the headlines in Italy. There seems to be a lot of momentum for Mario Balotelli to make it back to the Italian national team. So I wanted to ask you, and I don't want you to think this so much in terms of the current Chelsea, but just in general, with everything that we know about Super Mario, would you want him to be part of your favorite team?
Nope. Not at all, David. As a British guy may say, not for me, not for me. He's 27 years old, David, but he is the old 27. He has been in this game for a long time, as you know. I don't want Super Mario because he's a tease. I have found myself every time he's wound up somewhere new, this time being in Nice, and I may say he's playing very well for Nice, but I still think that's more because it's Nice and not a top club. But every time he goes somewhere, David, I think, maybe this will be the time he puts it all together. The goals start flowing in and there's no problems off the pitch. That doesn't happen. So I don't want to be a fool anymore. If a team that I supported, whether it was Chelsea or another team, got Super Mario, I'd almost think, oh, look at that physical specimen. And he's only 27 and he's played for all the top clubs. Maybe we could be the club where he finally puts it all together. No. And I do value club chemistry somewhat, David. I definitely think club chemistry can be overvalued. There's definitely a happy medium there. But Mario is the most extreme example of a player that could shake up the clubhouse, in my opinion. So some people may say to me, David, well, Alex, you wanted Aubameyang on Chelsea. And of course, Aubameyang has had some problems with Borussia Dortmund. Mainly, I think it's just not showing up when he's supposed to show up. I don't think his offense list is not even close to what is on Super Mario's. But the main reason why I would take Aubameyang and not Super Mario is Aubameyang actually scores goals for an important team. Okay, I want production. If you give me production, I will sacrifice a little of craziness. Mario at this point is not enough production and too crazy. I love Super Mario, as I know you do, David, but I don't want him on my team. And I know this was not specifically about Chelsea, but let's pretend he was acquired by Chelsea. Could they become any more of a clusterfuck than they already are? So I wouldn't want to take the risk. If he's producing goals up the wazoo, fine, but not on my team. No, thank you. So that's my answer, David. But where do you stand on Super Mario?
So I'll be honest, I'm really not objective with Balotelli. I try to really pride myself on always detaching myself from a situation. One of my favorite writers and podcasters is Zach Lowe, and Bill Simmons always calls him Spock because he's so logical and objective, and I try to really model myself towards that. But with Balotelli, I have a strong affinity to him. It all started because, you know, I grew up in Italy as a foreigner. Granted, I'm not black, but I could imagine for Balotelli what that must have been like. So I have a strong affinity for him. I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying, everything that he'd bring, you know, the tease and all and whatnot. But I'm happy that currently he's really making a good comeback. I also think it's great that now there's buzz on him going on back on the Italian national team. So to answer the question, it's going to be a little bit of a cop-out, but I would absolutely take him on the Azzurri. You know, say he could play for Padova or, you know, a team that I really like. That's a whole other story, but I would love to see him back on the Italian national team. I think, you know, if the Senators, and he's had issues in the past with Buffon, De Rossi, players like that, you wonder if these guys are going to be part of the group moving forward. But if they are, it's going to be interesting to see if Balotelli is part of the group as well. You know, the best line that I can use for Balotelli is from one of my favorite movies, Bronx Tale. De Niro, who tells his son, you know, the saddest thing in life is wasted talent. And I really hope that Balotelli has a great second half to his career where we don't have to lump him into that saying, so someone who wasted his talent. So to answer, I'd love to see him on the Azzurri Club. Maybe that's a whole other story. So now let's get to our game predictions with Serie A coming up. And then we're recording this Thursday. Is a Serie A match tomorrow. So our Oracle, Thousand Names in Italy, has been absolutely scorching hot. Last weekend, he went 3 for 3, even guessed some of the goal scores. If that wasn't enough, I think he was sticking it to you, Alex. He picked the Eagles to win the Super Bowl and nailed that as well. So he's scorching hot. He's putting his huge streak on the line. I told him to really take his time picking these three games. So let's see what he has planned for us as usual, because we have people from Italy tuning in to see what he has to say. I'm going to read his predictions in Italian as well, and I'll make my own picks as well. So the first match tomorrow, Juve travels to the Franchi Stadium to play Fiorentina. So Thousand Names has his predictions going to end up 1-1 with goals by Simeone and Douglas Costa. His commentary is that Fiorentina manager Pioli is going to embarrass Allegri. He's going to say that the Cholito, Simeone, the son of the Atletico Madrid coach, is going to punish that pensioner Buffon, and he predicts that Napoli is going to take off in the Scudetto race. So interesting take here. So here's my two cents. I think Juve is really on a big win streak right now. They have the Champions League coming back. Napoli, and we'll get to their game after. Juve really needs to keep up with Napoli. I actually think they are going to win this one. I just think they've been playing really well right now despite the injuries. This match, though, with Bernardeschi coming back to Fiorentina really reminds me, I'm old, back to the early 90s when Robbie Baggio, who left Fiorentina to join Juve, which was incredibly controversial back then, he came back to the Franchi Stadium, refused to take a penalty shot. Instead, De Agostini, who was a good player for Juve, missed it. Juve ended up losing that match. Baggio even left the field with a Fiorentina scarf on, really a seminal moment in Italian football. Now, I don't compare Bernardeschi to Robbie Baggio. I don't think there's anyone in Serie A really compares to him. But definitely a fascinating match all the time. But I think Juve is going to win this one. So for people in Italy, Thousand Names, Fiorentina, Juve, 1-1, Simeone, Douglas Costa, Allegri umiliato da Pioli, il Cholito purga ancora il pensionato Buffon. In Napoli scappa. So I'm going to have Juve winning this 2-1, though. I'm going to have two goals by Higuain, who's on absolute fire, and I'm going to give Chiesa a goal for Fiorentina. So next up, we have Napoli. Big match for them playing against Lazio. So here, Lazio's been struggling a little bit. They are going to get back Captain Lulic and Milinkovic-Savic, who were suspended in the last match. Looks like Immobile is going to play, but Felipe Anderson, Lazio's keeping him out for disciplinary reasons. So should be an intriguing match. Thousand has Napoli winning 1-0, goal by Insigne. He says that Napoli is going to advance thanks to Catenaccio and Aiutini, as we would say in Italy, which are, you know, conspiracy theories of the league wanting to help Napoli. There's been some controversy on a referee being chosen to referee the match for Juve from the Naples region for the second week in a row. I think that's what he's implying. He's also saying that Napoli looks like Allegri's Juve, only that they play well. So he thinks Napoli is going to be maybe a little bit more pragmatic, and now Napoli are going to take off in the Scudetto race. In Italian, Napoli-Lazio 1-0 Insigne. Azzurri avanti con aiuti, aiutini e catenaccio. Sembra la Juve di Allegri, solo che gioca bene, fuga Scudetto. As much as I like Lazio, I'm with him. I think Napoli is going to win this match. I'm going to give 1-0 as well, but I'm going to have Mertens with the goal. He scored 4 goals in the past 3 matches, and I think he's going to continue this. Last prediction from Thousand Names, Spal-Milan. He has it as 1-1 with goals by Cutrone and Paloschi. His commentary is, Gattuso reminds him of Stramaccioni, only with less charisma. Man, that's a low blow to Gattuso, and he says that it's incredibly sad to see Milan like this. In Italian, Spalmila 1-1, Paloschi Cutrone nella sfida tra centravanti bidoni che risuscitano, vince la paura. He had said that when it looked like Kalinic would play, and then Gattuso ricorda Stramaccioni, ma con meno carisma, tristezza infinita, fidatevi. I actually think Milan's been doing really well. I think they're going to win in Ferrara against Spal, something that Inter wasn't able to do. I'm going to have it 1-0, and I'm going to have Suso goal in this match. So Thousand and I disagree on Fiorentina-Juve. He has it as a draw. I have Juve winning. We agree Napoli is going to beat Lazio. I have Milan winning against Spal, and he has it as a draw. Other two matches I want to bring to your attention, Inter playing at home against Bologna, return for Palacio, to me one of the most underrated players in Serie A of the past 10 years, and Roma plays at home against Benevento. So let's see if Thousand Names can keep his hot streak. Someone who always keeps the hot streak are our listeners who send really amazing questions. To do so, just use the CalcioLand hashtag and shoot us a question. So which ones are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, let's start with a center back. Why not? Who will Stefan De Vrij play for next season?
Great question. So I have to say Lazio has done a great job in season re-signing a lot of their key players. Last April, they took care of Milinkovic-Savic. In season, they signed Immobile, Strakosha, very underrated goalkeeper, and Luis Alberto, who's been absolutely sensational. The one player they haven't officially resigned yet is De Vrij, and very important because his contract is expiring, unlike the other players that I mentioned. So there was a lot of buzz, and even on Di Marzio's side, we reported the agreement was there. It was just a matter of it being announced, and then it wasn't. It sounds like there were some issues maybe over the marketing rights, things like that. So the deal isn't official yet. So Lazio was offering him a big raise and a short-term deal with a release clause for around $25 million. Basically, it was a compromise saying, look, we don't want to lose you for free. We'll give you a raise. And, you know, if someone wants to pay the exit clause, we'll let you go. So at least we don't lose you for free. In the meantime, and even before this, Inter's been trying really hard to sign him. They can offer him a larger salary than Lazio. So let's see what he does. This is an intriguing situation, especially with Barca signing the center back from South America. I think they're out of that race. So I think it really comes down to Inter or Lazio for De Vrij, who I think, when healthy, one of the best center backs, not just in Serie A, maybe in all of Europe.
All right, next Twitter question. David, will his recent drunk driving — I'm here in America, so I'm saying drunk driving, but I don't know if you've seen this, David. Some people in England, they call it drink driving. Well, nonetheless.
Yeah.
Will the drunk driving incident impact Bruno Peres' future at Roma?
So this was already his second one. Destroyed two beautiful cars in Rome. It was very early in the morning. Not so much the crash, but it was at 5:30 in the center of Rome. Again, his second one. So I don't know how much this really impacts his future at Roma, because to be honest, Roma was already trying to get rid of him well before this second incident. They tried selling him abroad. He could have gone to Portugal. They had a deal with Genoa where he would go there for Laxalt. That deal then collapsed. Interestingly, then Laxalt scored two goals against Lazio, so maybe he helped Roma in that way, at least. So I don't think it impacts him because Roma wants to get rid of him. But if anything, this might actually make it harder for him to leave Roma. Maybe his value goes down with these off-field issues. We saw a similar situation with Casares at Juve. Too bad, because not that long ago, Bruno Perez was a very exciting player when he was at Torino. But at Roma, he's been an absolute bust.
Yeah, not the right trajectory for him at Roma, that's for sure. How about this, David? Do you think Isco to Juventus in the summer is realistic?
So there's been a lot of buzz on this over this week. I think in Spain there are these reports that he could leave. And look, Isco's been linked to Juve for many times. He has that absurd release clause. But, you know, the way I see it, Juve already has a lot of talent up front. They've struggled to get Bernardeschi some playing time. But maybe if Dybala leaves, and maybe if he goes to Real Madrid, you know, they can kind of work out a deal involving Isco. So short of Dybala leaving, I don't see it, just because of the numbers game, how many players Juve has up front. But maybe that's a deal where, you know, Isco heads to Turin and Dybala to Real Madrid. So let's keep an eye on that. But as of now, I don't know how realistic this really is.
I have a strange feeling Isco would do quite well in the black and white. So who knows?
I agree.
All right, next one. Is there an argument to be made that Higuain's transfer is what inflated the market? At 28 years old, going for $90 million made Neymar going for $200 million almost normal.
So this is a great question. Shout out to the person that sent that. I really enjoyed this one. So here's the way I see it. To me, both the release clauses that Higuain had and Neymar, I think both Napoli and Barcelona thought they had made the release clauses so sky high that there was no way they were going to be sold. I think Napoli especially, there was no way they thought another Serie A club would be able to afford Higuain. Then, of course, Juve sold Pogba for even more, and then they could afford it. It was a big gamble for Juve to spend so much on a 28-year-old. Now Higuain is 30. I've always said that deal will ultimately be judged if Juve wins the Champions League or not. Even getting to the to multiple finals wouldn't be enough. But look, Higuain's done very well for Juve. Spending so much on an older player is a big gamble, but Juve really wanted a great number nine, like someone who could score consistently. It's very hard to bring those types of players to Serie A. Higuain was already there. They weakened a big rival as a result, although you got to give credit for Napoli reinvested that money well. So it's a great question. I think you can make a case that that inflated the market a little bit. But again, I think those exit clauses were set at a price so high that neither club thought anyone would pay them. So fascinating questions. If our listeners want to weigh in, please tweet me because I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this one.
Okay, David, does Inter's pursuit of Lautaro Martinez mean Icardi is leaving in the summer?
So Inter has completed the deal for this very promising Argentinian striker. They've been going after him for some while. Even Atletico Madrid were in on him. It sounds they closed the deal for $25 million, and he's going to go to Inter. So I don't know if this automatically means that Icardi's leaving. Again, Inter not that long ago invested even more in Gabigol to bring him, and you know that Icardi didn't leave. He stayed. I think, though, it comes down to if Inter doesn't make the Champions League, I think there's a good chance that Icardi will say, okay, now I've done my part. I stuck around multiple years with no Champions League. Now it's time to go. At least Inter would have an intriguing backup. But I'll say that if Inter makes the Champions League, I don't see a correlation between the two.
Okay. What players do you see as the future BBC for Italy? Are there young talents ready to replace Pirlo, Buffon, and Totti?
It's a very good question. So, you know, let's not assume that Italy would play with a 3-5-2, a variation of it in the future. It's certainly possible. If in the BBC, you know, there was the advantage of these three outstanding center backs that also played together on a club, so you just transported that to the national team, and there were some big advantages to that. Now, Barzagli's really old. I think he's done with the Italian national team. He's flirted with leaving before, but I think that's it. I could see in the short term Romagnoli replacing him. I have to say, he's really impressed me this season at Milan. There's a lot of talk on all the new players Milan brought in, but Romagnoli has been really good. I think he's been much better than Bonucci, to be honest, overall. So I could see if Italy sticks with a 3-5-2, I could see Romagnoli slotting in for Barzagli. Romagnoli has some experience in a three-man defense, and he could play with his teammate Bonucci, and I think Chiellini is going to keep going with the Italian national team. So I could see him inserting in that mix. You know, of course, there's Rugani as well, but I think he took a little bit of a step back in recent weeks. There just aren't that many great Italian center backs. That's really something of a concern. As far as the second part of the question, in general, there just isn't great talent on Italy right now. I think with Donnarumma, we have a perfect replacement for Buffon. You know, Jorginho maybe could replace Pirlo. He's not exactly, I mean, he's not old, but he's not that young. I think the one talent to really look in Italy is Federico Chiesa on Fiorentina. I think he's going to be probably the best player on the Azzurri at some point. I think it would be intriguing to see him play with Insigne, maybe even Balotelli. That would be an intriguing trio up front. So for the BBC, I see Romagnoli. For the rest, Donnarumma, they'll be in good hands at keeper. After that, it gets a little bit more challenging.
So it sounds like someone like Verratti is not even getting you that excited anymore.
I see Jorginho and Verratti, though, as being able to play together. I think Jorginho is a little bit closer to Pirlo than Verratti is.
Fair enough. Well, David, unfortunately, let's move to an Italian who is not going to be part of this crop anytime soon. He was on the losers list last episode. David, what happened to Domenico Berardi?
Yeah, so even my friend Adam Digby had a really good column on him. And I know Adam loved Berardi for a while. You know, our friend Enrico Passarella Guardalini, who we had on the podcast years ago, said he could be the Italian Robin, like a great comparison. I thought that, you know, Berardi with his odd personality, with all the times he turned down Juve, could turn out to be the new Di Natale of Italian football, like a great striker on a provincial team. Now we don't even know if he's going to be able to do that. He really took a turn for the worse. For him, there's been a combination of things. Last season, he suffered those injuries. He never was the same. He had started the season gangbusters in the Europa League preliminary rounds. Then he had some injuries. Hasn't been the same. This season, probably misses his former manager, Di Francesco, who's at Roma. So really a step back considerable for Berardi. You know, for him, I don't know what the right thing to do. For Sassuolo, selling low on him doesn't sound particularly exciting. On the other hand, maybe he could benefit from a change of scenery. I would kind of like to see him at Roma playing with Di Francesco, but there's also a lot of pressure. So it's really sad because he really could have been a very intriguing player for Serie A, but also for the Italian national team.
All right, from one sad story to kind of another. David, what are your thoughts on Antonio Conte's next job?
So we've been talking a lot about him. I'm going to write a column on it next week because I've been thinking a lot about his future. I really see two routes that make a lot of sense and then a third possibility as well. The easy thing for Conte to do would be to just do the return to the Italian national team and become the manager there. It would be somewhat easy transition. He knows, although the federation is changing, he knows the job. He knows Coverciano and whatnot. But, you know, he's still a fairly young manager, and he'd be joining Italy before a Euro, not before a World Cup. So, you know, you'd have to say, you know, is he going to stick around 4 years and finally actually coach in the World Cup, assuming Italy qualifies, of course. The other option is PSG, which if you put a gun to my head, where do I think Conte is going to be next? That would be my guess, is he'll be at PSG. He'd have the budget that he's always wanted. They have a great squad as is. I think Milan's a very dark horse, A, because I'm not sure they'd be able to give him the finances on the transfer market until they settle their ownership situation, and also because Gattuso's really showing some good flashes recently. So I think Italy and PSG are the two likeliest destinations.
Okay, this question really pains me to ask you, but I have to. David, which Serie A player reminds you of Super Bowl? Oh, let me try again. Which Serie A player reminds you of Super Bowl hero Nick Foles?
Man, a lot of shots at you. 1,000 names, picking Eagles, and then callers doing this. Poor Alex, he's a big Pats fan. So it's a great question. I've been thinking a lot about it. I couldn't think of a more modern one, but I thought of Gianfranco Zola, who was Maradona's understudy at Napoli and then won a Scudetto with them, was a really intriguing player off the bench for them. So why he's the equivalent to Nick Foles, for those of you that don't follow the NFL, Nick Foles wasn't the starter on the Eagles at the beginning of the season. Their starting quarterback, highly rated guy, tore his knee, and then Foles led them to victory. So the best comparison I have is Zola, but I'm curious to see our listeners, maybe especially the older ones, if you have a comparison, please let us know. So now, Alex, I'm going to turn the tables and ask you a question. We get a lot of people want to hear from you. So someone asked us if Gary Cahill should be considered a cancerous captain. I know he's not your favorite player, so maybe we set this one up on a silver platter for you.
Maybe it did. But I want to say off the top, I actually used to be a big Gary Cahill fan a long time ago when John Terry and Ivanovic were fully part of the defense. I thought Cahill was a nice player. But there's one thing I've always known about Gary Cahill. There's nothing going on in there. There's nothing going on. Having him wear the captain's armband, David, is giving cardboard the captain's armband. It does absolutely nothing positive for a squad. So is he a cancerous captain? Not really, but is making him the captain potentially cancerous to the team? 100%. And this all goes back to Antonio Conte. I don't understand why, with Conte knowing so much as he does about the sport, what makes teams tick. I mean, sure, he had Buffon be captain for him for the Italian national team and for Juve, so that's he doesn't even have to think about it. He's got the greatest captain ever. And yes, he comes to Chelsea and John Terry is on his way out. And John Terry was an amazing captain. But, oh, Gary Cahill, David, when he lets up three goals in a row, he just rubs his head like it's a genie and a magic wish is going to come out. He takes no responsibility for anything else that's going on the pitch. David, if you were supporting your team and they got scored against, wouldn't you want your captain to then re-encourage the squad, right? Like, come on, guys, we got this, yep. We got this. Gary Cahill just looks around in bewilderment. He has no idea what he's doing from a leadership point of view. And it makes it even worse when there is a captain on the pitch, and his name is Cesar Azpilicueta. So he should be the captain. The last thing I want to get off my chest, David, is when I have said in the past, and now everybody agrees, at least all Chelsea fans agree about Gary Cahill not being a captain. But when I have slated Gary Cahill on, say, Twitter, every once in a while someone will say, oh, yeah, but he started on the team that beat Bayern in the Champions League. Oh, I couldn't hate that logic more. So you want to just give someone a starting job now in 2018 for a game that he played 6 years ago? So if you're Bayern Munich, do you want Lucas Podolski starting at left wing just because he's a World Cup winner? No, that's horrible logic. Unfortunately, you can like one player one day, and then you cannot love them the next. I loved Cahill. Now, no more Gary Cahill. So I'm moving on. And let's move. You know what? This got me so hot and bothered. Let's move way out of football altogether, David. I want to ask you, what is your favorite current metal band?
So great question. So I'm old and, you know, I got to say I'm in the phase of my life where I don't listen so much to new music. So with metal too, it's one of my favorite genres, but I honestly think that it's almost all possibly been done what you can do in the genre. So, you know, there's always the classics, and I always go see Metallica and Slayer when they play as the two bands that I've been following for a long time. Of the newish bands, I will say that I really like Lamb of God. I think they are the best metal band out there since Pantera, who I thought were really, really an all-time band. I've seen Lamb of God live a few times. Really good band. Someone also asked me just in general, good, a new band, and I have to say last year, I went to the Boston Calling Festival mainly to see Tool and Run the Jewels. But this one band that really stood out to me was Cage the Elephant. They kind of had a old school sound, a little bit like 60s garage rock, a little bit Pixies type of sound. So of the newer bands, and they're a newer band even than Lamb of God. They're not metal, but if you're kind of into rock, that's a band that I can recommend.
All right, David, now we have another personal question. Good friend of the show, Michael Lisi, asks, which bands do you wish you had the opportunity to see live? And he notes that his is Nirvana.
So this is, I'm going to give a humble brag alert, and I really don't want to sound like a douchebag with the way I answer this. So I will tell you, Alex, I don't have many vices. I don't own a car. I don't even have kids. So, you know, I work a lot. I have a, you know, I like to do some things, and going to concerts has always been my passion ever since I've been a kid. So humble brag alert. I will say I've almost seen pretty much every band I would have liked to see kind of in my lifetime. Sorry, Michael, don't want to stick the knife in your stomach there, but I got to see Nirvana in one of their last shows in Italy. I think that the last shows they did were in Italy. Kurt Cobain had tried to commit suicide in Rome. They came back to the U.S. and then blew his brains out in Seattle. So I got to see one of his last shows. So, you know, the way I put it, it's more like I would have liked to see some of my favorite bands really more in their prime. As an example, I saw Page and Plant the week that I moved here to Boston in the early 90s. I would have loved to see Led Zeppelin with Bonham on drums like in the 70s. There's also, you know, I would have loved to see the original Lollapalooza tour in the early 90s with so many alternative bands that I love so much. There's one show that I will tell, there's two shows that I wish I had gone to specifically, and this was Nine Inch Nails at Woodstock in 94. You can see it on YouTube. To me, that's one of the best concerts on YouTube, period. Really fantastic, iconic. I wish I had been at that one. And more recently, one of my biggest regrets in life is when Temple of the Dog, and that was Chris Cornell's band with the guys from Pearl Jam, minus Eddie Vedder, went on a very short reunion tour. They played in New York. The tickets were outrageous. I was really tempted to go because I was like, hey, you know, I really want to see it. But then I was like, oh, you know, these guys are going to tour. They'll probably come to Boston. I'll wait a little bit. And then, of course, Chris Cornell left us. So I will say Nine Inch Nails, Woodstock 94, Temple of the Dog, more recently, are the concerts that I really regret not going to.
Okay, interesting. David, last Twitter question, and I'm sure you're going to love it. You get the chance to form your ideal band. Who do you have as singers, guitarists, bass player, and drummer?
It's a fantastic question. As you know, Alex, I've been thinking a lot about this one. So I'll give you my ideal lineup. I actually think it would work pretty well as a group. So drummer, as much as I love Danny Carey on Tool and I was tempted to put him, it would definitely be Dave Lombardo from Slayer and some other bands. I'm doing all I can to get him on the show. He follows me on Twitter. I'm really trying to make it happen. Definitely my favorite drummer. On bass, I was tempted to put Les Claypool from Primus, but he really plays a really odd style. I think he really needs to be in his own band. I wanted to give a nice FU to Quincy Jones with his interview where he trashed the Beatles. I was tempted to put Paul McCartney here. Quincy Jones called him like the worst bass player ever. I think Paul McCartney is an outstanding bass player, not just a great singer and songwriter. But my pick is going to be Pino Palladino. He's a not a big name. He's a session musician. He plays with D'Angelo, the R&B guy. Like, he really funky sound. He's toured with Nine Inch Nails. Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails called him the best living bass player, and I kind of agree with him. I think he could blend into any band perfectly. On rhythm guitar, I'm going to put Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. A lot of guys know him as a singer. He used to be in Metallica. He's the front man for Megadeth, but I think he's an outstanding rhythm guitar player as well. A lead guitarist, I'm going to put Eddie Van Halen, my favorite, to me, the most important guitar player since Jimi Hendrix. And for vocalist, I really could have gone in a lot of different directions. You know, speaking of concerts, the first concert I attended was back in the early 90s in Turin at the old Delle Alpi Stadium. I got to see Soundgarden and Faith No More open for Guns N' Roses. And these are probably three of my favorite singers were at that show. Chris Cornell, of course, of Soundgarden. Mike Patton of Faith No More, who's done some bands with Lombardo. He'd be my pick. And then, of course, there's Axl Rose as well, who in his prime I thought was an outstanding singer. But you put a gun to my head, I'm going to pick Chris Cornell. So that would be my band, Lombardo, Palladino on bass, Mustaine, rhythm guitar, Eddie Van Halen, lead guitar, and Chris Cornell as singer. So thank you all for the questions. You guys know I love the pop culture ones, but even the football ones are outstanding. So now let's introduce the interview. I'm thrilled that we're joined by our great friend, Matteo Bonetti. We've had him on two other times. You know, I will tell you that when I thought of starting this podcast, the only thing I knew for sure about the show is that I wanted Matteo to be the first guest because he has a great story to tell. Some of you who follow the show know that when we have a first-time guest, we really get into their career, discuss topics, try to give tips to all the aspiring writers and broadcasters out there. And Matteo was the perfect guy for that in our first episode. But today, since we've covered this story, and if you haven't heard, definitely check out episode one of the Calcioland podcast because he has an amazing story on his career. Today, we're just going to get into Serie A and some video games with him. So I think you guys will really enjoy it. And I want to ask you, if you like what you hear, if you're listening to us on iTunes, it literally takes 2 seconds, please leave us a 5-star review. If you want to leave us a comment, Alex and I read them all. We really appreciate it. If you're listening to us on Android, on SoundCloud, please subscribe. And as always, we appreciate your support. And now enjoy our fantastic interview. For the interview segment of the podcast, I couldn't be more thrilled with the guests that we have tonight. The first guest ever on the Calcioland podcast, a dear friend of the show. Very excited because we haven't chatted during the Serie A season with our good friend Matteo Bonetti. You guys know him as the voice of Serie A on BN Sport USA with our good friend Dre Cordero. So Matteo, it's a real pleasure to have you back on Calcioland. Welcome aboard.
It really is. I feel like my invites that that you've sent in the mail, they've been getting lost, Dave, because I haven't received any in a few months now. I started thinking that maybe you didn't care about me anymore. Anyway, glad to be back on.
Awesome. So, Matteo, I've had you on previous times, you know, during at the end of the mercato. This is really have a chance to go into the nitty-gritty of the Serie A season. So I figured we'd talk about the teams at the top, ended maybe a little bit on the relegation race, and then we're going to talk about your passion, video games. I know a lot of our listeners are really looking forward to challenging you on FIFA, so we're going to get into that on the end. All right. So speaking of teams at the top, kind of like yours on FIFA, let's talk about Napoli. I think for them, it was a challenging January transfer window. They were linked to Simone Verdi, who I think would have been a really intriguing addition on that team. Then UNS from Ajax came to Naples, then mysteriously disappeared, and they went crazy trying to get Politano at the end. They think they might actually look at it as a bullet dodge as long as they hold on to win the Scudetto. So tell me what your take is on Napoli. Do you think they're really going to regret not making any substantial moves, or do you think the return of Ghoulam and Milik are going to be enough for them to make it to the finish line for the Scudetto?
It's a good question. They're only going to regret it if they get an injury in their starting 11. This is something that I've talked about many times when we're doing the Napoli game. The fact that they really don't have that much depth in the sense of, just look at Fawzi Ghoulam, the starting left back. There is a significant drop-off going from Fawzi Ghoulam, who's maybe one of the more underappreciated fullbacks in the league, and then Mario Rui, who Maurizio Sarri knows from his days at Empoli, but is clearly not of the level of Ghoulam, especially going forward, especially with his delivery. So if Napoli have an injury in the starting 11 where Maurizio Sarri, he knows his favored starting 11. Maybe there's a little bit of rotation with the midfield three in the sense that you can bring on Zielinski and Diawara, but the front three are set. The back four are set. He knows that his best four is his side, Ghoulam, Koulibaly, and Albiol. Any drop-off, if any of those players are gone missing, especially in the front three where they really don't have an alternative right now to Dries Mertens without a Camille constantly injured. But then on the other token, how do you blame Verdi for not wanting to come? He knew that he'd only play if either one of those front three got an injury, and maybe that's why he was so appealing to Napoli, is because he's completely two-footed. Yeah. I remember reading about a coach who managed Verdi at Milan saying that he actually wasn't sure, and I don't think Verdi's even sure which foot, right or left, is better. He's completely ambipedal. He scored a free kick with right and left, which I think he's the only active player in Serie A to do so. So that makes him a really interesting object for Napoli. The fact that he can play right wing, maybe as a false nine, left wing. I mean, that would have been a real luxury signing. Obviously, they'd have to overpay for him. I'm not sure if Verdi's worth in the 30s. I mean, I'm still from an era, as you are, where 24 million, you can snap up Zlatan Ibrahimovic in his late 20s. So to start thinking that a player like Simone Verdi, who only a year and a half ago was at Carpi trying to get them out of the relegation zone, it's all a bit wacky, isn't it? But he's a quality player, and Napoli will only regret not being able to make one of those moves if they do suffer a catastrophic injury.
Very interesting. So the second team in the standings is Juventus. And when I was in Italy, they lost to Sampdoria. I watched that game. They looked in total disarray. Allegri, after the match, said, I'm going to fix things. And since then, he really has. They've been really on a great roll. Napoli, I got to give them credit. I thought after Juve beat them at the San Paolo that was going to be it for them. But Juve's still right there. Recently, though, they've had some setbacks with injury. Of course, they had Dybala, Cuadrado, and then Matuidi recently, who I think is going to be a big loss because he's been playing really well for them. So they stood pat in the January window. I think they were surprised, though, at the injuries at the end. If you had to pick one team between Napoli and Juve to win the Scudetto, who would it be? And the other question I have for you on them, with the way Benatia is playing and the team really hitting on all cylinders, especially with Douglas Costa in fine form, do you think this team could be as good, if not better, than the one that lost in Cardiff to Real Madrid?
As for the Scudetto race, my brain tells me it's going to be Juventus. They're the team that they've been there before. We always want to count them out to get some sort of diversity, to get some sort of drama at the end. And I think we'll be going down to the last final match days, maybe the last round or last two. And that's when the Scudetto will be decided. So it's going to be a lot more entertaining from a neutral viewer standpoint. And obviously for a rating standpoint, that can only be positive. My heart obviously wants Napoli just because of the storyline.
Yeah.
I have no affiliation with Napoli, but we know very well that they win a Scudetto, we're not going to hear the end of it for the next few decades, which could be annoying, or it also could be charming in a pretty goofy way. Yeah. The Napoli fans are incredibly passionate. You know, they've almost seen the mountaintop so many times. Just let them have it this one time. And, you know, a Juventus Scudetto, the fans are so used to them. We don't even know, is it 31, is it 50? No one cares anymore outside of the Juve fans. And great, they'll celebrate it for a few days, but that's it. Now it's time to bigger, you know, we have to start frying bigger fish, which, of course, for Juventus is the Champions League, right? Yeah. That's where they feel like they've been scorned. So, you know, you all, as a neutral, you almost want it so badly for Napoli because you know that the fans will appreciate it that much more. But, I really do feel if Napoli does not win it this year, they will not win it for another decade or two or God knows how long. Their starting lineup, some of the key players are in their 30s now. Are they really going to be able to hold on to Mertens and Insigne? We know that a lot of big, big offers are going to come. De Laurentiis is going to be tempted just like he was when 94 million euro came for Higuain. So I fear that if Napoli don't get the job done this season, that we will not see them win the Scudetto for any time soon. I think you asked a follow-up question.
So tell me, I think with Juve, what you've seen with Benatia, and I think Douglas Costa brings a lot of what Dani Alves was doing. You know, I thought the best matches Dani Alves had at Juve really weren't at right back. They were at right wing, and I think Douglas Costa brings a lot about them. So what you've seen from Juve in the past few weeks, do you think, assuming they get Dybala and Matuidi back healthy, do you think this team can be as good, if maybe even better, than the one we saw lose against Real Madrid and Cardiff in the final?
I think they can be as good, and I think several of the players that they did acquire in the summer are players that you want in the Champions League, especially against Tottenham. Blaise Matuidi, he's that sort of modern box-to-box midfielder that he feels very much like a Premier League player. You could see Blaise Matuidi doing very well in the English League. His intensity, his pace, his aggressive nature, he's better on the ball than I think a lot of people give him credit for, and he always makes the forward run. I think a player like Blaise Matuidi is exactly the kind of midfielder you want if you're taking on, you know, Spurs at White Hart Lane when the fans are down your throat. The intensity is going to be incredible, and I think that's going to be the player that they will miss more than anything. As for Douglas Costa, pace. Ask any defender that's played the game what is the most terrifying thing, and that is a player that has that just searing world-class pace. Douglas Costa, his first few steps when he gets going is faster than anyone I can remember seeing in Serie A. His acceleration is remarkable. Like, he's always able to find that angle. If he's taking on a fullback, it doesn't matter how quick the fullback is, Costa will find the angle. And I think he gives them such a more explosive nature than what we've seen. And, you know, I can't wait for the day where we have Costa, Dybala, Bernardeschi all behind Higuain. I know that Juventus fans are enamored with Mandzukic, and he's always going to have a role in the biggest games, but I have a feeling that that front four right there, that is, it's explosive, it's modern, it's technical, they're quick, and it's very much the kind of four-man attack that I think would terrify opponents. Obviously, I think we're going to see more of a 4-3-3 against Spurs, more of a measured approach from Allegri.
Yeah, Douglas Costa, especially in Serie A, the attributes that you describe and his dribbling in Italy, they would say he's fuori categoria. Like, there's just not that many players like that in Serie A. So very interesting take there. So now let's talk about two teams that have collapsed. I don't think it's completely surprising. I think maybe the fashion and how early it happened in the season maybe is. So had we spoken about 2 months ago, we would be talking about a four-way race in Serie A. Of course, Inter and Roma have struggled quite a bit recently. So tell me, of the two teams, which of the collapses has surprised you more, and which of the two teams has a better chance to get back fully on track?
Roma has surprised me more. We've come to expect this from Inter, although with Spalletti, you figured that maybe they would be on the right path. But if you look at the results from Inter in the start of the season, I even remember the game where Inter played against Roma and Roma hit the woodwork, I think, two times. There was a bullet from Kolarov that clanged off the post, and Inter had no business winning that game. I don't know if they had any business winning a lot of the games that they did in the first half of the season, because it was so many breaks. It was so many one-goal different games, like a 1-0 win here, a 2-1 win there. And you can't keep up that sort of... I feel almost lazy to call it luck, but in a lot of those games, I felt like Inter were being outplayed on the pitch, and the results just kept going their way. So you're not going to be able to keep that up for a full season. So I think for people who did watch Inter every single week, you could sense that maybe this team did have a bit of a fortune with the results. Maybe their actual play on the field didn't match what you saw in the standings. For Roma, I didn't expect them to be as strong as they were last season. It's a big drop to, you know, to go from Spalletti to a manager like Di Francesco, who's fine, but who's never managed at this sort of level with the pressure. So far, the signings from the big man up top, Monchi, have not quite worked out. We might be seeing the first flashes from Cengiz Under, who looks to have a sweet left foot. But even Grégoire Defrel, I don't understand why you buy a player if you're going to play him out of position. And the manager knows Defrel. The manager coached him at Sassuolo, and Defrel led the line. And all of a sudden at Roma, you're seeing him playing on the wing. He looks like a fish out of water. He's got no real role on the team. He doesn't know where he's supposed to be. He's not being influential. And these are all players that, you know, whether that was a Di Francesco signing, I assume so, given that there were Sassuolo players. But, you know, even the Monchi ones, Hector Moreno, he's now back in Spain. He didn't make a splash like a lot of center backs did at Roma. So I wouldn't say I'm surprised that Roma is taking a bit of a dip, but I'm much more surprised. I'm more surprised with Roma than I am with Inter, just given how Inter played in the first half of the season.
Interesting. So a team, you know, recently they've struggled a little bit, but Lazio really had a lot of momentum for a while. I think they have really a very underrated squad. You know, I don't think there's that many Serie A teams that have, you know, players like De Vrij, Milinkovic-Savic, Immobile, Luis Alberto. I mean, that's a really intriguing core. Lucas Leiva's been terrific. So they've made it a race for the Champions League. So I think it's going to come down to them, Inter, and Roma for the other two spots. Let's give the other to Juve and Napoli. Of these three teams, which one do you think is going to be on the outside looking in for that Champions League spot?
That's a tough one. I think Lazio's definitely going to be in that top four. Obviously, the top three are the ones that go directly into the group stage. I agree with everything you said, and Luis Alberto especially. Just a quick note on him. He's been the revelation of the season. Yeah. He's basically been the replacement for Keita Balde without Lazio having to spend any money. And he sort of has this languid approach when he plays where you're wondering, is he interested? Is he really in it? He tends to just float around with the ball. It's really quite remarkable because he's not quick. He's lanky and tall, and he doesn't seem like the most athletic guy. But then you see the way he controls that. You see his first touch. He has il corpo veramente da fenomeno, you know, as they say in Italian. He really does have that bit of fuori classe about him that not many players have. So I have really enjoyed watching Lazio, and I don't know if these players are not underrated in Italy, by the way. This is outside of Italy, yes. But in Italy, people very much know the worth of Milinkovic-Savic. They're calling him the new Pogba, maybe even a better overall player than Pogba. But if I had to guess right now which team out of Roma, Lazio, Inter finishes outside the top four, I would have to go right now with Inter. And I'd be more worried, especially if we have problems with Icardi. Do we trust Eder to lead the front line?
No. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. So it's going to be a fascinating race. So I'm curious to see Lazio struggle a little bit, how they get back on track. And I was a huge fan of Keita Balde, but Luis Alberto's been even better. He's been really a revelation. So now let's talk about Milan. Another thing that surprised me is Gattuso, because I have to tell you, I thought he was going to be another disposable hero, a former legend that comes in, kind of gets put to kind of change the subject when things are going poorly, and kind of gets sacrificed. But he's shown some pretty good flashes as manager. So you've called some of their games, you've watched them every time, I'm assuming. So tell me what stood out to you about Milan, what's different under Gattuso. We've seen under previous managers, they had some pretty positive streaks. I remember one under Mihailovic, under with Montella, of course, they made it to the Europa League. So are you a little bit more encouraged from what you're seeing from Gattuso compared to the previous managers? And what has stood out to you since he took over the team?
Well, in the beginning, I thought it was going to be the biggest laughing stock and embarrassment that we've seen at Milan forever. I mean, you look at some of the games that Gattuso lost with Milan in his first month in charge, and you thought, well, this is, you know, suddenly we're closing out on the relegation zone. What could happen next after spending a quarter of a billion euro for players that can't even see a minute and have less goals than Brignoli, the Benevento goalkeeper? So it was a bit of a laughing stock first month for Gattuso, but I'm really glad that he's been able to settle in. The first thing he did, which is quite simple, is switch away from that 3-5-2. It just didn't work. It worked maybe for Bonucci, even though he had the worst 6 months of his career playing in a role that he knows very much. But people forget, Bonucci played in a back four before Juventus. He played in a back four with Bari when he was alongside Ranocchia, when they were the two of the best defenders in Italy. He played in the back four last season with Juventus when they went all the way to the Champions League final. And now he's finally in the back four again. He's building up chemistry with Alessio Romagnoli. I don't know how much credit we can give to Gattuso. Obviously, he deserves some. But remember, with all these new signings, it was always going to take time. So whether or not that meant the first half of the season would have to be sacrificed, we're starting to see the players gel. For the first time this season, we're seeing a Milan that has an identity. The 4-3-3 very much, I think, uses the best components of this team. It's also the formation that Milan used in the youth setup, even down to the little kids, the Pulcini. So maybe no surprise that two of the players who have broken out recently have been two players from the youth system. Of course, Patrick Cutrone, who's Milan's Milan's leading goal scorer this season in non-competitions. And then Davide Calabria, who had an inexplicably wonderful performance against Lazio, where he temporarily morphed into Maldini. No idea what that happened. I mean, he dropped back down to earth and he became Calabria again. He's back now. He's back now. He's also suspended for the next game. But you look at the players, David, and you can just see that it seems that they're having fun. Suso is back to his best. Jack Bonaventura in the midfield three works a lot better. I think the one part of this formation that I'm still not convinced with, and I don't want to see any part of Milan, is Lucas Biglia. He's a passenger, I feel. He's not up to scratch with the rest of his teammates. He's not exactly creating much. He often opts for the back pass to the defense. He doesn't seem to be on the same wavelength as the players around him. A player that I've seen really rise under Gattuso is Franchessi, who I think has been the best player in 2018 for Milan. And it may be no surprise that he's doing it under a manager that had some of his same characteristics to bite, the aggressiveness. Franchessi's a lot better going forward than Gattuso was. But the fact that he's only 21 and the way that he's already grown from the first half of the season to this one, I think Franchessi can really become a very, very special player. He has been incredible in some of these games this year.
Interesting you say that, because, you know, Kessie, the first half of last season was sensational when he was at Atalanta. He was linked to all the big clubs in the Premier League, PSG, then took a step back in the second half of the season. And you're right, under Gattuso, he looks like the player from the first half of the season at Atalanta. So now let's talk a little bit about the bottom of the table, because to me it's a pretty interesting race there. We have the three teams that were promoted from Serie B, Spal, Hellas Verona, and Benevento, in the last three spots. If the season ended today, they'd be going back to Serie B. But Spal has 17 points. We have three teams above them, Chievo, Sassuolo, and Crotone, within 5 points. So tell me a little bit your assessment of this race. I know you've watched a lot of these teams, sometimes playing the top teams. So tell me, if you had to predict, which three teams are going to go back down, and, you know, what stands out to you in this race?
I think Benevento and Hellas Verona are for sure going down, and then the final spot is going to be between Spal and Crotone. Let's start with Benevento first, who have made some very, very peculiar signings in January, bringing in the ex-Arsenal fullback Bakary Sagna. It's like they're trying to recreate a 2012 winning 11 team or something. They brought back Sandro, who was at Tottenham. They signed Cheick Diabaté, who was at Bordeaux. A lot of these players coming off either retirement. I believe Bakary, I think Sanya wasn't even playing football in the first half of the season, but the others, certainly not players who are coming in any sort of form. So it reeks of desperation from Benevento, but they needed to shake something, right? I mean, there's nothing you can't really lose when you only have 7 points in the season, you're rock bottom. So Benevento, it's going to be interesting to see how these new players adapt to the league and midway through the season. Spal is maybe the best defensive team out of all those bottom four. They play a much more conservative style, back five. They have probably the best strikers out of any of those four teams, especially now that they actually have a decent rotation when you think of, you know, they had Borriello, they had Floccari, they had Antenucci, who's really doing well in the last few months, and then Alberto Paloschi. So you have three proven Serie A veterans leading the line. And then Antenucci is finally getting a chance in Serie A after spending time with Leeds and then Serie B, who looks to be the one who can really provide that moment of unpredicted magic. At least he has done so in the last few months. As for Hellas Verona, they're done. They're done. They sold Cáceres. Pazzini went to Levante and scored that 2-2 equalizer against Real Madrid in front of his home fans. It was really a funny moment. But, I mean, they're down to Moise Keane. They also lost Daniel Bessa, who was their creator in the midfield. Yeah, so I think right now, Benevento and Verona are down. They are down. The last battle is going to be between Spal and Crotone. Crotone, we all remember what they did last season in the last few months with Falcinelli basically scoring a goal a game. It was quite remarkable. But you look at them on paper, and it's really a team that it's a Serie B team. The thing they have going for them is that incredible crowd at their home stadium that really does act like a 12th man. And it's not just them, because Spal have the same thing. Spal's the crowd in Ferrara has been brilliant. I remember that Spal Inter game. It's just really the noise is just absolutely raucous. So I'd say right now, if I had to guess, it's going to be Crotone, Hellas Verona, and Benevento down to Serie B.
Very interesting. I agree with your assessment. I'm kind of rooting for Spal. Like, I kind of like that team for some reason. So you mentioned a few players that stood out to you, Luis Alberto, Cassie. I really love the shout-outs you gave on the teams at the bottom. But are there any other players in Serie A this season that have stood out to you when you call the games or even when you're just watching as a fan?
Yeah, let's start with Patrick Cutrone, because he came out of nowhere. You know, when you spend 75 million euro on two strikers like Kalinic and Andre Silva, you think, well, this guy Cutrone is, you know, he'll play the odd Coppa Italia game against like Padova or something. And I don't mean to say Padova just for you, Dave, but just a random Serie B or Serie C team. But the thing that stood out to me the most about Cutrone is the fact that he's a teenager. He's playing in a team that just spent a quarter of a billion, that has all this pressure to win the Scudetto, to get into the Champions League, or else disaster will happen with financial fair play and selling big players. And this guy's scoring all the gol pesanti, the heavy goals, the goals in the final moment, the goal against Inter in extra time, the goal against Rijeka in the final moment in the Europa League. He's scoring against Lazio, one of the better teams in Serie A. So he has that ability to always make himself an option. His movement is spectacular. And that's oftentimes the thing that comes with age that you can't teach. You know, you can teach that he has the stamina, he's got the strength, he's got the speed, he's got the fitness. But it's his sense of goal, which has been really, really special to see. And it reminds me a lot of Inzaghi. He's quicker than Inzaghi ever was. He's quick, too, as well. He's a pacey player. He's got decent size. I think he's 6'6", but he's pretty strong. He can hold off a defender. I think Cutrone has all the tools that you could want to really build on this kid and give him a chance. The big problem is, you know, you have Andre Silva. He's got all the weight of the money. The people at the top who bought him are going to want to see him play. Same goes for Kalinic. You know, what are you going to do? Waste 75 million euro? I mean, just look at this last game where Andre Silva started. Why wasn't it Cutrone? Cutrone deserved to start, especially after that performance against Lazio. But it's not going to be that way, unfortunately, because of the money that those guys are getting, because of their salaries. They're going to get time, and I want to see Andre Silva succeed. But I also have to realize that Cutrone, while he's not as technical as Silva, while he might not be as fun, he is a player that right now he's been maybe the most, well, he's been the most prolific but he's also been the most incisive, and he comes up in the big moments, which you really did not expect from a teenager.
Very interesting. So we're recording this Thursday night time here in the U.S. So I know you're doing some Serie A matches this weekend. So tell our listeners where we can hear you in the next few days.
Absolutely. So on Friday at 2:45 p.m. Eastern time, we have a great match, a great rivalry, Fiorentina, Juventus. That's going to be very, very fun to do. On Saturday, I'm calling a French game, Paris Saint-Germain Toulouse. But on Sunday, we're back with Serie A, where we have Roma Benevento. I'm very excited for that one because of the reasons that we talked about before, to see some of these bizarre signings from Benevento and see if they can put up a fight against the Roma side that very desperately needs the 3 points. On Saturday, while I won't be calling it, we also have the Milan game. That's at 9 a.m. Eastern time on a Saturday, which is maybe bizarre, but they did add more time slots, which is good because you get to see more games as there are more chance of actually showing them. So that's my weekend summed up.
Awesome. Okay, so now all the questions I asked you so far, to be honest, were just a ruse to get to this part, because this is what people want to hear from you.
Yeah.
This is, even when we were doing, before we started recording, I think Alex, my producer, is getting ready to challenge you. I think he's practicing his game as you and I are chatting. Hopefully this is getting recorded, because I think he's getting ready to challenge you. So about a month ago, I saw you play my good friends from Italian Football TV, Marco and Mike, on FIFA. I think these two guys really didn't know who they were going up against. So you're a great gamer. Everyone knows you as a Serie A expert, one of the voices of Serie A on BN Sports. But I think what you're really, really good at is FIFA and video games. So tell us, when's the last time you actually lost a game? What is your style? Are you kind of like a Sarri type of guy? Or are you more pragmatic, more Allegri? And more importantly, where can my listeners challenge you? Because I think they're ready. Alex is practicing as we speak.
Yeah, well, I actually just lost the game today, but it's because I play in it's the highest level you can play it in FIFA 18, which is online seasons, Division 1. Where it's very, very difficult, and you have people who actually put real money into the game to open packs and get some of the best players. You can even use icons like Maldini and Ronaldo. So my whole thing is I refuse to put a cent. Every single player that I have is a player that I earn through playing. So my team isn't as good as some of the ones that I come up against. But for me, most importantly, guys, it really is a way to just kind of disconnect from work, you know, and just kind of enter my own world. And I put on my headphones, I set up my whole gaming setup. I got like a smart desk that you can raise and lower. I got my gaming chair. I've got headphones that weigh like 5 pounds and I feel like an astronaut. And, you know, just all these things that kind of add to I got a special controller that's been custom made. And, you know, it really is my biggest passion. And I've been fortunate enough to kind of make some new friends in the gaming world, like professional esports players who have made me realize how the future really is with esports. I mean, these guys are getting on Fox Soccer, or not Fox Soccer, but FS1. You're starting to see rights to video game tournaments being bought out by real channels. And that kind of inspired me to make a Twitch account and stream when I start playing. So people can watch me play and interact with me at the same time, and we can kind of share tips and talk about real life football, talk about the game. So my Twitch is, I think it's just my full name, twitch.tv/ Matteo Bonetti. And it's been really, really fun to kind of just, use my video games as well as a chance to interact with the people that, have followed me in my career.
Incredible. So Alex is going to be ready to challenge you. I'm too old. You absolutely embarrass me. But listen, it was incredible to chat with you. We got to do this more often. So everyone, get ready to challenge Matteo. Definitely check out his great work that he does with Dre Cordero calling Serie A. I don't just say it because I know them pretty well, but they really do an outstanding job. So Matteo, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It was a real pleasure.
Appreciate it so much, man. Always a pleasure, and I do want to challenge you in the virtual world. I look forward to that.
All right, but you'd have to use Benevento, and I would have to use like a Legends team. We'd have
Can
to
I tell you something real quick before we go? Before we go, so the guys from IFTV, we played the second game, which they said they'd post on YouTube, and they never did, where they picked Juventus or Napoli, and I actually took Benevento. I ended up scoring a poker with Armenteros, okay, a Cuban Swedish striker who's never seen the ball this entire season. So I'll gladly take Benevento, David.
All right. Well, shots fired, right. Italian football TV, which we love. So fantastic. Again, thank you so much for being on. It was a lot of fun.
All right, man. Take care.